ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय आशिश्री वृक्षो पुरा पुर्या नाभि वारम् अभारत तत्राकानस् ततो मृत्यु पृथक्त्वम् उभयाश्रयम् अशिश्रिक्षो पुरा पुर्या नादिद्वारं अभानथ तत्राभानस्ततो मृत्यु पृथक्त्वम् उभयाश्रयम् अशिश्रिक्षो पुरः पुर्या नादिद्वारं अभानथ तत्राभानस्ततो मृत्यु पृथक्त्वम् उभयाश्रयम् अशिश्रिक्षो पुरः पुर्या नादिद्वारम् अभानथ तत्राभानस्ततो मृत्यु पृथक्त्वम् उभयाश्रयम् अशिश्रिक्षो Desiring to go everywhere. Puraha, in different bodies. Purya, from one body. Nabhi, varam, the navel or abdominal fold. Apanata, was manifested. Tatra, thereupon. Apanata, excuse me, apana, stopping of the vital force. Tata, thereafter. Mrityu, death. Pritaktvam, separately. Ubhaya, both. Ashrayam, shelter. Translation. Thereafter, when he desired to evacuate the refuse of edibles, the evacuating hole, anus, and the sensory organ, thereof developed along with the controlling deity, Mitra. The sensory organ and the evacuating substance are both under the shelter of the controlling deity. Purport. Even in the matter of evacuating stool, the refuse is controlled. So how can the living entity claim to be independent? Translation of text 28. Thereafter, when he desired to move from one body to another, navel and the air of departure and death were combinedly created. The navel is the shelter for both, namely death and the separating force. Purport. The pranavayu continues the life, and the apanavayu stops the living force. Both the vibrations are generated from the abdominal hole, the navel. The navel is the joint from one body to another. Lord Brahma was born of the abdominal hole, Garbhodakshin Vishnu, as a separate body, and the same principles follow even in the birth of any ordinary body. The body of the child develops from the body of the mother, and when the mother is separated from the body, when the child is separated from the body of the mother, it is separated by cutting the navel joint. And that is the way the Supreme Lord manifested himself as separated many. The living entities are therefore separated parts, unless they have no independence. So here the universal form is then showing the lack means lack of independence of living entity. That the navel is where the life force is, so life and death are connected there. In the sacred thread ceremony, then one of the mantras is that the life airs that are tied at the navel will not come undone. Because if they come unloose, then there's death. So the navel then is the center of the energy. And from there, then life continues from one to the next. So the point being made is that the Supreme Lord, it's from Him that everything is coming. From Him Brahma came. Then from Him that process of one living entity expanding from another through the navel. All this is established by this point. So the independence of the living entity actually is not there. That's the foolishness. We think we are independent. But we're not. So now, why would it be so important to establish we're not independent? There is the element that, of course, if we're independent, we think we're God. If we're independent, then we act separately from the Lord. If we're independent, then we, try to control, enjoy the material energy to our own satisfaction. But something further than this is that if we're independent, we avoid our relationship with the Lord. Point is, if we're dependent, then naturally there's relationship. We can look at this in the negative and think, well, if I'm dependent, I'm not independent. If I'm not independent, I can't be happy. But the independence to be happy is only valuable up to the point that it creates a separate entity. Right? Because to have relationship, there must be two. So when there's two living entities, then you can interact. That's the importance of independence. Does that make sense? Right? Because to act so that one can work in relationship, so that one can perform activities that enhance or improve the relationship or are favorable to relationship, that's the importance of independence. Right? Does that make sense? God is a person, and we are persons. So we've been expanded from Him, given that independence, so that that independence can be exercised to fulfill the natural relationship with the Lord. Does this make sense? Right? Means we have a relationship with the Lord, so unless there is some independence, how is there going to be rasa? Right? In other words, the mood is the same, but the thought is different. Right? Because one friend, you like somebody, you have friendship with somebody, you have closeness with somebody, because of qualities that they have, that they exercise in their independence. Right? But that independence is favorable for your relationship. Right? Therefore, it is valuable. Independence is important, but beyond that, what is the importance? Does that make sense? That's actually what independence is for. Is to be utilized. Okay, another example. Prabhupada mentions how you have the servant. The servant is paid. The servant serves you. Nice. But more nice is the person, the friend or the family member that's not paid and they render service to you. Right? Because that's being done out of affection. Isn't it? So now, what's the difference between the servant and the relative or friend? Is the independence. Right? So if that independence is used properly, it enhances relationship. But if it's used improperly that you walk out on the relationship, then what's the meaning? Does that make sense? That's the use of independence. It's not for doing what we like, it's for using it to properly develop those relationships that we're obliged to. That's what independence is for. Is to prove that it's what you want. Right? You have an option. You could do this, or you could do that. You could do this because you like doing it. The other person wants you to do it because you like to do it. So, accepting that yes, they want me to do it, so therefore I'm doing it, is nice. It shows the other person cares for you. But if you decide, well, rather than doing what I want to do, I would rather interact with that person who's making that sacrifice to let you do what you want to do, then that proves the importance of the relationship. Does this make any sense? If you figure this one out, it goes a long way. So, the whole idea is dependence is actually what is value. Right? It means, why is the relationship with the mother and child considered exemplary as material affection? Because the dependency is absolute. Right? And therefore, the response from the mother is as much as good as it gets. Right? So dependency is actually what creates relationship. We will generally think of the opposite. We have to remember our paradigm we're coming from is we're trying to be gods, so we're impersonalists by nature. Means by mundane nature. So for us then, being God is more important to us than serving others. So, the serving of others means, how do you say it? The expression of dependence is actually what people are looking for. Alright? And we see that Krishna is independent, but for tasting rasa, then he becomes dependent upon the devotees. Right? That's why it's said that the devotee is actually, means no one's equal to the Lord, but the devotee actually becomes greater. Because the Lord then surrenders, because he becomes dependent upon the devotee for that rendering of affection, or show of affection. This makes sense. Right? So, even though we will take it as if you're dependent, then this is not good, because then my mood of masculinity or the Purusha Bhav, the controlling principle, is reduced. Yes, it is reduced. But the point is do you want to be in control or do you want to have a relationship? That's your choice. Right? Because you see, if you think about it very carefully, those situations where you want to control the relationship, that's actually the points at which the relationship is strained. If you think about it. When it comes naturally, fine. But when there's any pressure, that's where the strain is there. Right? Whether it is direct or indirect, it doesn't matter. Whether using force or emotional control, it doesn't matter. That's where the weakness comes. So the dependency is actually where the relationship flows the most smoothly. Right? Does this make sense? We're making this point of the dependence to show that that's actually where it's, the relationship is tasted, in the expression of dependence. But the point is when we express that independently, that's where the whole thing becomes very nice. Right? Does that make sense? So we're looking at the relationship from two different angles. The one of the independence, in other words, you use your independence to show your dependency on the other person, that's relationship. That's a dynamic, progressive, operating relationship. Anything outside of that is dysfunctional. So, the whole idea is that relationship is there. Independence is there, because the Lord has the independence. But He is independent, right? But He gives up that independence to relate with the living entity, right? Does that make sense? So now how are you going to be friends with the Lord if you're not doing the same thing, right? Friendship is based, now here's the third point, friendship is based on equalness, right? There's some common quality that is the, how do you say, the quality is the, by volume is very great, you know? Does that make sense? It's not just a little thing you have in common. Well, you both happen to be on the same planet. Okay, great. You both happen to have feet, okay? Maybe if you're in a place getting a pedicure, then you have something in common, right? Right? But if you're just walking down the street, you have feet, that's not the prominent. You're trying to get somewhere. Right? So unless you're both trying to get to the same place. Does that make sense? In other words, the commonness is the predominance. Right? Then you can say, I can have a relationship with this person. Does that make sense? Unless the field is common between the two living entities, then how will operating the field result in interaction and relationship? Does that make sense? Okay? So now, here is, God is independent, He's Atmarama. He gives up that independence to relate and interact with the living entity on the living entity's terms. Yeah, that's the term. Does that make sense? Mother Yashoda sees Krishna as her son. Krishna reciprocates on her terms as her son. Right? Sudam and Sridam see Krishna as their friend. On their terms, he reciprocates as the friend. Right? Sridam, it's equals. Sudam, it's intimate. The gopis, they see Krishna as their lover. Then he, on their terms, reciprocates with them. Right? So we can see, he is supremely independent. He gives that up in that independence to interact with the living entity on their terms. That's rasa. Right? That's the actual, this is called vibhav. Within the definition of rasa, then there's five aspects of that. So one of them is vibhava, means you have the ashraya and the vishaya, where the vishaya, or the actual independent, then reciprocates with the ashraya, who is the dependent, on their terms. Does that make sense? Very important point. This is actual masculinity. Right? Masculine means you are independent, you give it up to show that based on the other's terms. That's masculine. You're independent and then everybody's got to deal with you on your terms. That's feminine. Right? So the tough, cool dude is actually feminine. Think about it. When all the guys are out there whistling and calling the girls, are the girls all you know, fluttery and jittery, or do they go cool? Right? Yes or no? So being cool when it's got to be on your terms is feminine. Think about it, all you tough guys. You ever wonder why your relationship at home is not working? This is it. You want to be man? You want to be God? Then act like God. Stop acting like a woman. So God works on the others, the dependents' terms. What they like, how they like to be interacted with, that's how he deals. Of course, he has set the rules for that, right? He has already defined what is male and female, because it's him. But still, that's what he does. Okay, so now to the point. That was a tangent, sorry. The point is therefore, to be on equal terms with the Lord and have rasa with the Lord, you have to have independence and give that up to please the Lord according to His pleasure. Then you're equal. That's what God's doing with you. So if you do that back, then you can say you're equal, you have a relationship. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay? So this is what all this stuff is about. We're dealing here with the impersonal. Because of the impersonal, we don't see this. So therefore, it's used the impersonal language, or the language of the tattvas and getting out of the material world is used here in the second canto, right? We don't see so much of this terminology in the first canto, right? That's the opening, right? But here, now the mechanics are showing how we have to cross over to our impersonal independence and actually use our independence for personal relationships. And that relationship is God. That's what's important. You see that, all other relationships will work. Right? You can do this with God, it's easy to do this with other living entities. Right? Because they've expanded from Him. Does that make sense? So, to express and show your dependency upon the Lord, and therefore to use that independence to please Him, then that is actually what the whole cosmic creation is about. But in the spiritual world, they do it naturally, and here we're kind of a little stubborn. Right? We're somehow under the thinking that our idea of, you know, maleness or purushaness is going to work. So you take the combination of impersonalism and femininity and put it together, that's a bad combination. Very bad. Right? It's just like it said. If you're on a battlefield and it's a co-ed battlefield, and the enemies that are coming at you, there's some male and some female. Then those expert in the art of war, their absolute recommendation is shoot the women first, because on the battlefield they're the nastiest. Because here you have femininity that's impersonal. Bad news. Right? The man is just impersonal. But you take that, you don't know what the women will do. The men you can estimate. The women you can't. So how bad it can get, you can't imagine. Does that make sense? So that's us here in the material world. Women are jivas that are impersonal. So how bad is it going to be in relationships with anybody, especially God? Right? So the idea is therefore expressing dependency and working to please the other person actually gives the most happiness. It actually gives the shelter we're looking for. And there's no loss. There's only gain. So we have to be willing to do that. Willing to take that step. Right? The Shastras use the word bold. We have to be bold enough to actually take it. Then it'll work. And it doesn't matter what all our other impersonal, you know, women friends say. It works. Right? Here, women meaning generic, meaning women and entities. It does work. Surrendering to God, actually working to please Him, you will get whatever you're looking for. Otherwise, you won't. Right? Think about it. You've gotten so many things. But are you happy? Are you satisfied? Right? Anybody who's been around for a while, the amount of stuff and things you can do now in this, you know, day and age, as compared to, let's say, the 80s, how much more material facility do you have? But think about it. Are you that much more in that proportion happy? Satisfied? Right? Does that make sense? So it's not, the material is not actually providing what we think it should. So that's the problem, is actually what works is generally the opposite of what we try. So here the Lord is suggesting is, this is what He does. He uses His independence to take care and please the living entity. So if we use that independence to take care and please Him, then everything will work. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes. If we're a pure devotee, we naturally pray for spiritual desires or prayers. If we're not, is it okay to pray for material desires? And what's the limit? The first canto points out that even the gross materialist, actually everything's coming from God. So he would do well to pray to God for it, rather than make his own separate endeavor. So yes, you can pray to Krishna for that. It probably gives the example of going to an immensely wealthy person and asking them for 10 rupees, when they could give you lakhs or crores. So, the material desire is there, you pray to Krishna for it, Krishna will fulfill it, but he'll fulfill it in such a way he'll remove it. So, as long as your prayer for that material desire is so that by dealing with it in connection with the Lord, it will be removed, then that is glorious. If you just straight ask for material desires with only material purpose, at least you've gone to the right place. But it's not glorious. Right? It's better, let's say, it's better than those who don't know. So compared to the materialists, it's great, it's glorious. But compared to the devotees, then it's not so special. So we see Kardama Muni, good brahmachari, first class brahmachari, but upakurvana brahmachari. He had material need, he wanted to fulfill that, but for the purpose of realizing Krishna. Right? So he prayed to the Lord that he may get a proper wife, have a proper child, that he can then absorb himself properly in the tastes and needs of the Grihastha ashram, so that he can fulfill that, remove that, and come back to just straight devotional service. Right? So that happens right in the next canto. So it's quite early. So it's the important way. So once we've gotten over the impersonalist and we go to the Lord, then we're starting with material desire, material need. But that's the appropriate way to. So it doesn't matter. There's no limit. As long as that's the purpose. It's connection with Krishna by following his rules. It's to please Krishna because the result you want to give to him, and the main result of dealing with the material need is to remove it so that we can become situated in devotional service. Right? With that in mind, you will get out. It may take you a while. Grihastashram is given 20, 30 years just to do that. No one says it's going to happen overnight. But if that's your purpose, you will become a vanaprastha. Right? If it's not your purpose, you won't become. Right? Right? In other words, you do an activity, if you're focused on the result, what you want, you'll move towards that result and make adjustments till you do. Right? But if not, you'll just stay in doing the activity and not actually know where you're going. Does that make sense? Because fulfilling the desire isn't actually going anywhere. Because if you fulfill that, then there's another one that comes up because the last one didn't actually satisfy you. So you just go around in circles. But fulfilling those desires so that it brings you closer to Krishna by getting rid of something that makes you forget him, right? That's progressive. Then you're moving forward. You're going somewhere. Is that okay? If I pray for being a pure devotee and I pray for my material desires, then Krishna will fulfill them in two different ways. Actually, it's the same way, it's just two different perspectives. One is the fulfillment of the desire, the other is removing the facilities for the desire. You understand? When you fulfill the desire, it's removed, right? It's like this. You eat. Why? Because there's a hunger. But by eating, the hunger goes away. Yes? Isn't it? Your actual point is to get rid of the hunger. No? So, but it's done by the same thing. So by interacting with your material needs, then the desired need for them will be removed. If it's in connection with Krishna. Right? So, the first one, the Sakam Bhakta, his thing is the fulfillment of the desire. But for the Nishkam Bhakta, it's the removal of the desire. But the desire still has to be operated, right? Something goes away because you deal with it. The dirt in the clothes goes away because you wash them, not because you just wish it to go away. Right? Oh Lord, make my clothes clean. So how is it going to happen? By washing. Right? Oh no, I prayed, it didn't happen. There's still a dirty pile of clothes on the floor. You know? No, you have to wash. In other words, the area where your needs are, you have to deal with them. If you deal with them sakam, then there's more pain. Because you're looking for the pleasure. And nishkam is less pain, because you're not looking for the pleasure. Right? Something that gives you pleasure is what's going to give you pain. In the material world. So if you're not looking for the pleasure, therefore the pain doesn't bother you. You don't care. Okay? So the point is for Krishna it's the same thing. It's the same operative. It's just a matter of your perception and your experience of it. The sakam has a tendency not to notice it's being taken away, and they get upset by that. While the nishkam is happy it's going away. And welcomes that. You know, if the desire is still nice, okay, it's connected to my conditioned nature. But it's going away is more important because you're getting closer to Krishna. Less distracted from Krishna. Sakal is, you're so happy Krishna has fulfilled the desire. He answered my prayers. He is a person. He is there. He does reciprocate. You know, he is sensitive. He is all those things that we as, you know, how you say, the feminine nature is looking for. Right? But at the same time, is then, because it has to go away because we're trying to gain it in the material world rather than the spiritual, then that pains us. If we're too attached, we might even blame Krishna for taking it away. Right? So that's why the recommendation is always that of Naishvanya. But if there's a particular field you want to function within, that's fine. Just the more you're attached to it, the more it will be, more the removal of it will be pain. That's all. And the less you're attached to it, then the same interaction, the removal of it will get less pain. And then the pleasure from it will be appreciated. It won't be overpowered by the pain. Right? Because pleasure is natural for the living entity, and pain's not. Therefore, even though they're both equal, the soul will notice the pain more because it's unnatural. Right? So therefore, if we over-glorify the pain, the pleasure, which is just our natural position, and then therefore we'll over-emphasize the pain also. But the Naishkarmya Bhakta doesn't over-emphasize the pleasure, it's just what comes along with it. And so therefore the pain comes along with it, they don't over-emphasize that anymore. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's good. Is that anything else?
Virat-purusha. Material form, generally we say that Maya Devi expands all the forms of material, so it's feminine. So is he actually a purusha in a feminine body? Because he's also desiring to enjoy it. He says he wants to replace the pleasures, sexual pleasures, here in the material form of this. Again, it seems like maybe a male and female. How do we see that?
Virat
Purusha. It appears he's trying to enjoy the senses here.
Okay, so we see in the Virat Purusha that Maya is expanded into the material energy, so she is on the forms. At the same time as we see the Lord is having the desire to enjoy those. It means not enjoy the forms, but have that particular kind of enjoyment. The example was given here of the sexual enjoyment, therefore the genitals are created. So, how do we see this Virat Purush? Because we say Purush is male, but then there's the element that the Maya is female. So the point is that the field is the female, right? The object of sensuality is the feminine. Means the activity is performed by the masculine. That action is then directed at the feminine. That makes it the object. Then separate from that, then you get the result. Right? So the subject, through the activity, goes to the object and you get the result. Right? So the point is, here we see is the masculinity is maintained because he is the subject, right? He is the seer, not the seen. Material energy is the seen. So for the desire to taste these different sensual experiences, then his focus is then directed towards the object, right? But now, in this, then comes, now we get into very subtle points, because we always have to remember, technically there's not really any difference between the male and female. Just one is the source and one is the result, or means is the dependent. But otherwise you can't separate the two. It means you can't have masculine unless it's feminine. You can have neutral, which is neither masculine or feminine, but to have masculine means it's feminine, to have feminine means it's masculine. So, to be the Lord means he has to have his energies. So here, that's why it said it's illusory. Because even though it's his potency, and it's being directed at the material energy, that's not actually what's going on. Because for him, it's not actually Maya. The Maya is us. We're the ones that actually creates the Maya, because the Lord interacts with his potencies through his yoga mind. But because we perceive the material energy, or yes, the inferior energy as something that we can be the Purusha and enjoy, that's where the illusion comes in. Because we can't. Right? It doesn't make any sense to us. Because we are superior energy. So we can relate to the internal potency, which is superior energy, which relates to God. But because the inferior energy is also come from Krishna, it's part of him, he can relate to it. But he's dealing with it as his energy, not as Maya. It's Maya for us, it's not Maya for him. Right? And then the form that he takes in that also then we see is the non-difference in the expansions of the Lord. That's why we say technically there's no difference between Sada, Shiva, and Vishnu. But his dealing with the material energy is actually his tamasi. Right? Is that false ego is there. So it's actually, technically, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is Sada Shiva. But he has, even though it's in the flavor of Sada Shiva, he's still in the mood of Vishnu, the maintainer. Right? Does that make sense? So you have overlapping moods. Just like, let's say you have an overall, let's say in the family you have different relationships. So you take the mother. Then the mother, she has many relationships. Right? But she's still mother. So mother of the child as nourishing the child. Or mother of the child meaning she's protecting the child. Or mother of the child chastising the child. Right? So then that would be like you're taking Vishnu, but within Vishnu, then there's creator, maintainer, destroyer. And they're all three Vishnu. But then those positions are Hiranyagarbha or Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. Right? So then you take that, so then you come into the material world, so then you take mother as the chastiser. Right? But technically, so then you could say now you're taking Shiva. Right? Vishnu is Shiva. But technically, he's doing that just to nourish the child. Because you chastise the child so that they will grow up properly. Mother Yashoda chastises Krishna, so he'll grow up to be a proper, you know, member of the community. Like that. So still, the Vishnu aspect is not removed. Right? Does that make sense? So it's cycles within cycles. Does that make sense? Like that. So, it's just like, let's say another example would be in astrology. You have 9 planets, for so many years under the influence of each planet. But within the one planet's influence, that's also divided by 9, that 9 planets are again within that. Right? So let's say you're in Sun. So you start with Sun, then Sun Moon, then Sun Mars, then Sun Rahu, Sun Venus, Sun, you know, so it has that, then within that you can take that and divide that by the 9. So here we're dividing by 3. Right? You're taking Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Right? So Sambandha is the existence. So existence in the spiritual world is as servant of Krishna. Existence in the material world is as the Lord. So that's where the illusion comes in. So that means that existence is an illusion, a false ego, so that becomes Shiva. Because existence also, in its impure state, transforms into ignorance. Right? The mode of ignorance is actually coming from the perversion of some being. Right? So that means it's Shiva, technically. But, Krishna himself, he is existence, so it's Vishnu. So Shiva doesn't exist without Vishnu, so it still doesn't work. Does that make sense? So it's actually that. So Krishna in the form of Shiva is interacting with the material energy, but that form of Shiva is actually tamasi or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Right? So then, in this way, he's interacting with his own energy, so he's playing with himself. Prabhupada gives the example of Krishna playing with his reflection in the mirror. There's nothing wrong with that. Right? So, therefore, his masculine desire to experience the, you know, to enjoy the, how do you say, enjoy the experience, then is performed through putting that onto his energy. So it's still masculine going to feminine. But that feminine is him and is perfectly matching. But with us, the feminine is not, because we're not Purushas. We're small, but we're not Purushas. And so that trying to enjoy material energy is false, therefore it's mine. Right? But this thing of Krishna enjoying material energy then in one sense is illusory. Because it isn't material energy. It's just his inferior energy. Yeah. It's Maya for us, but it's not for Krishna. Like that, because it's real. It's Maya for us, because he is Purusha, and it is Prakriti. But we are Prakriti, and we're trying to enjoy a Prakriti that we cannot even relate to. Right? Temporary, full of misery. Right? That doesn't make any sense, and full of ignorance. It just doesn't make any sense to us. So how would we interact with it? So it's totally not. Right? But then we can relate to the spiritual energy, but to try to enjoy it as Purusha, that would still be Maya, because we're not Purusha. So to relate to the internal potency as servant of Krishna, that we can actually, that actually functions. Is that okay? Did I answer it all, or did you?
When Mahavishnu belongs to some material energy, mm-hmm. It's like an amorous dream. He's described as an amorous dream.
It is an amorous dream.
And he comes forth with the material. But the whole purpose of that is simply to wake the living entities up to bring them back to Godhead. So it seems like a material, an amorous dream. He wants to contact, but, as you're saying, he's maintaining Vishnu with the main idea of taking on the living entities back to Godhead.
Yeah. So here, final comment, Janayaskabhu, is that just like Mahavishnu is, he glances over the material energy, so then we can take it as an enjoyment, because it's there. But we also notice that it's in there as Rama Devi. So we see is that Rama Devi also, as Krishna, he becomes the glance, then Rama also then becomes the consort of that glance. Does that make sense? In other words, if he's in the mood of the Creator, then she takes on the feminine counterpart of that. If he's as the maintainer, she takes the feminine counterpart. If he's as the destroyer, then she takes that counterpart. So he glances on the material energy, then that is being done. You have the element of Hiranyagarbha creation, but he enters it as Sadashiva, so then she takes on that move. So technically, there is only one energy. Right? But it takes those different moods according to Krishna's different moods. And he's doing that to bring the living entities back, but it is his pastime. So he's having a good time in it. You know? But it's not that, but it's different from how we have a good time. Right? It's only because his senses interact with his energies, therefore, our senses can interact with him. It's just, as I mentioned, when his senses move, ours can move with it. If his senses aren't moving, ours can't move. So technically, he's interacting with it, but it's his energy. It is personal, it is his relationship, right, in that form of Shiva. But we don't see it like that, so therefore it's illusionary. Does that make sense? So we become bound by it. Krishna's not bound by it because he's aloof from it. There is no Maya. Right? Because Maya is a dream. So he's awake. We're the ones in Maya. He's never in Maya. So this is the importance of a Chintaveda-Veda Tattva, is to be able to appreciate these simultaneously overlapping, seemingly contradictory positions. How it can be Vishnu but Shiva at the same time, and within that Shiva is the Vishnu. But all these That's why we deal with that. Other sampradayas generally don't deal much with these points, because they can't bring them together. But we do. We'll end here because it's getting late. Jaha Vrantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nityananda Prabhu ki.